Good morning. My name is Alicia, and I am an alcoholic and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. With me today is Annette, who is also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is People Helping People. I'd like to thank WHLL 1450 AM for allowing us the opportunity to share something about our alcoholism and the solution we have found in AA. The opinions expressed here this morning are solely those of the individuals who express them and not those of WHLL 1450 AM or of AA as a whole. People Helping People is focused on how AA can provide help to people who have a problem with drinking. Alcoholics can be helped to stop drinking with the support of other alcoholics who have achieved sobriety and who gladly share how they did it. Like the people here today, one alcoholic helping another is the basic premise of the fellowship of AA. Well over 2.9 million people in over 150 countries follow the AA recovery program. Here in Western Massachusetts, we have over 400 AA meetings a week, with approximately 6,000 members staying away from a drink one day at a time. The American Medical Association and the American Psychiatric Association recognize alcoholism is a disease. It is a progressive illness that can never be cured, but like some diseases, can be arrested. We feel that this disease is a combination of a physical sensitivity to alcohol coupled with a mental obsession. The best short description of what AA is and how it works that I know of is what we call the preamble. I'll read it to you now. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other. They may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor imposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help another alcoholic achieve sobriety. Now I'd like to introduce my guest, Annette, who will briefly tell us what it was like, what happened, and what it is like now. After that, I'll provide some information about how and where to get help.
Hi, my name is Annette, and I'm an alcoholic, grateful alcoholic, recovering. And I found alcohol at an early age, around 13 years old. And in the beginning, you know, it did a lot of good things for me. It brought me out of isolation, helped me be able to be around my peers. I was so shy and uncomfortable and awkward in myself that it was painful to be around people. But I quickly found that alcohol took all that away and gave me some courage. I could even have fun and laugh. So, you know, in the beginning, it was a good friend to me. And early on, I didn't get into too much trouble with the alcohol. I was, I think, 21 or so when I had my first blackout. I was out in Colorado. I had a six-month-old baby girl, had moved out to Colorado from Massachusetts with her father, and lived out there in a house with my cousin and my sister and my daughter's father. After a couple of months, he left there, and I stayed with my sister and my cousin. I really liked it out there. But I found that after he left, my drinking started increasing, and I started, I was going out to the bars a lot. And keep in mind, I had a six-month-old baby girl at home, and I was always pawning her off on somebody to take care of her so I could go out and drink. That was my number one priority. And I remember one night coming back with people from the bar, brought them back to the house, and I remember passing out shots of rum, going around, passing them around to everybody that was there. And anytime somebody would pass up on taking their hit, I would take their shot. And ended up, that was when I had my first blackout. And I didn't even like rum. That wasn't my choice drink at all. But it got me good and drunk, and that was my intentions. Fortunately, I had made arrangements with my cousin who was there to take care of my baby while I got drunk, because that's what I was planning to do. And he ended up having to take more care of me than her because I was in a blackout and I was pretty sick. So that was at the age of 21, 22, somewhere around there. I stayed living out there for another few months, and just couldn't afford it as a single parent with a little baby. I didn't have any job skills, was working at a convenience store, and just couldn't make it any longer. My sister had been taking care of my daughter while I worked, and we worked at the same convenience store, and I'd go in at 5 in the morning. She'd go in after I got home. And so she was my child care while I worked, and then she ended up following the Grateful Dead to California and never came back. So there went my child care. So I ended up moving back home shortly after my daughter's first birthday and moved right back into my mom's house. And the very night I get back, I had a couple of girlfriends pick me up, brought me to a party. You know, again, here I am having just putting my daughter off on somebody else to take care of her so I could go drink. And went to a party. It was a house party, and ran into a guy that I had known, met previously. And he and I started dating pretty much right away, and ended up living together. And within, 10 months later, we were married. Pretty quick move in there. So we ended up with a 10-year-long marriage where both of us were pretty heavily into the partying scene. And I remember always thinking, like, every time we were partying, and I'm saying to myself, I'm never going to do this again. I'm never going to do this again. Never going to do this again. But I kept doing it over and over and over. It was so insane, and I was just caught in this circle that I couldn't get out of. And I remember also thinking that I was the good parent because I was the one that got out of bed in the morning and made it to the couch, you know. But my kids were young. They were 5 and 10 when we split up. We got a divorce. I knew I was dying in that marriage. I had no idea, truthfully, how much the drugs and alcohol had to do with it. That wasn't the reason I was leaving the situation. There were other reasons, but once I got out of it, I actually started in therapy and learned about alcoholism. My therapist at the time, she was well informed about the 12 steps, so she just suggested for me to get in a 12-step program, pick one, anyone, just get in one. And that was actually a therapist that my ex-husband had called for us to go to. He was trying to save the marriage and try to keep me from leaving, and he didn't like what she had to say. I kept going back. He didn't keep going. Long story short, we ended up divorced, and that was my first introduction to recovery. I didn't stick around, though. That was back in the early 90s. I only stuck around for about 6 months, and I left. And 6 months later, I was out at dinner with some people that I worked for, and they bought a bottle of wine for the table. And my thinking went, well, I had quit the drugs. I had not been to an AA meeting in 6 months, but I was still sober, so I must be okay. Because, you know, I had stopped going to meetings, so my thinking just got distorted again. And I thought I was okay to drink some more. So I went out and drank some more and tried some of the controlled drinking that they actually talk about in one of the AA literature books about, you know, if you don't think you have a problem with AA, with alcohol, go out and try some more of that controlled drinking. And that didn't work. You know, I got away with it for a little while. And then what ended up happening was the things that I couldn't identify with the first time I came around had started happening. And it had been some time had passed because I was, again, I was staying home, only drinking at home, sticking to beer and wine, all the different ways I was trying to control it so that I wouldn't have to give it up because I had learned enough that if I couldn't control it, I'd have to give it up. And not even realizing at the time how insane that thinking was, because if you have to try to control it, then there's a problem. You know, people who are just social drinkers don't even have to try to control it. So that should have been the first red flag. But anyway, it took me another 12 years to come back to AA, and a lot of damage had happened during that time. And I ended up in a blackout up in the city of Boston with my then 22-year-old daughter. And she had to take care of me in a blackout. It wasn't pretty. And I had passed out face first on the sidewalk, cut open my lips, gave myself a concussion. And she had to call a couple of her guy friends to come help because she was pretty drunk herself. And she was resident assistant at a sober dorm. and had to get me in that sober dorm in a blackout. I put her in a really bad position, you know. That still wasn't my last drunk, though. I just became more determined that I would definitely just stay home and nothing bad would happen. Not seeing how, you know, that was keeping me from living life and not being available to be of service to people, keeping me isolated and lonely and depressed. And the depression just got worse and worse and worse. And I finally got tired of the pain and being sick, a lot of hangovers. And ended up, I was at a camp out in the Berkshires for a sober camp out for people who were sober. And I had gone for a few years before, and some friends of mine were going to an AA meeting, and I was bored and I was lonely, so I went. And what I heard in that meeting, it was a step meeting, and they read out of their 12-step book. And they had talked about that they had raised the bottom, that I didn't have to have those experiences that I couldn't identify with. And truthfully, some of the stories that I didn't identify with, like going to jail and things like that, it was only because I didn't get caught. You know, I drove under the influence, I don't know how many times, but I certainly put other people and myself in danger. So anyway, I guess the truth and honesty collided, and the willingness hit me that I was just willing to surrender to this program, and started going to meetings, found myself a sponsor, joined a home group, go to meetings on a regular basis, and I went through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous with a sponsor, because that's where the Alcoholics Anonymous big book tells me that that's the solution to this disease running havoc in my life. And it did put me into, I guess how I would say it would be, putting me into remission. It's still there. And if I were to pick up a drink at any time, it would just take me right back to where I left off. I've heard that story over and over and over again. And I experienced it myself with the first time I had gone back out. Coming back into the room 12 years later, I was actually, my disease had progressed even further than where I had left off the first time. It took more pain before I became willing to let that go, you know. And as I had said in the beginning, you know, in the early drinking time, it took me out of isolation. But then at the end of my drinking, it put me back in isolation. So it wasn't working for me anymore. Today I have a life that I'm very involved in AA. I do service work, and I have a home group that I attend on a regular basis and go out on commitments. And, you know, I have a whole fellowship of people that I would call real friends now. They're not just people I partied with, you know, real friends that show up when people are hurting and life things are happening. And we even do fun social things together. It was really good to find that I could actually have fun without having to have alcohol in my system. And the campouts and some of the there are bands that are people that are in recovery, and they go and play in different places, and you can go and there's no alcohol, and it's such a totally different experience, and felt really good to learn how to be able to have fun. You know, I certainly didn't think or plan on becoming an alcoholic. Truthfully, I think I was born that way. I've always had the restlessness, irritable, and discontent inside, and took a long time, even in the rooms of AA, for that to go away. But the more work that I did, the more that hole got filled. And today, pretty much, I'm happy most of the time. You know, life things still happen, but I have the tools to be able to get through those situations. And it's nice to be able to show up when, you know, we just recently had a couple of people who had lost loved ones to the disease. And it feels sad that it's happening, but at the same time, it feels good that I can show up and be available to help those people. That wouldn't happen if I was still drinking. Remember, I was in isolation. I wasn't showing up for anything. I have a great relationship with my kids today. I have made amends and made an amends to my parents and my siblings. And I'm married 8 years to a guy in the program. We've been together 12 years. We actually met at one of those sober campouts. We ended up, our tents were set up next to each other, and 2 weeks later we started dating. So you just never know the gifts that keep coming. But for me, the biggest gift is that freedom, that happiness that the Big Book talks about in the promises. It tells us that if we're painstaking and going through the steps, the process of the 12 steps, that we're going to know a new way of life, and we're going to have a happiness and a freedom that we never had before. And I'll pass for that.
Wow, that was like beautiful. Thank you so much. That was powerful. I really liked when you said, you know, alcohol brought me out of isolation, and then alcohol brought me back into isolation. I might use that. Yep. Thank you.
Sure.
That was great. So I would like to thank WHLL 1450 AM again, and Annette for being here. Before we go, I would like to make the audience aware of two AA committees that are available to the general public and the professional community. They are at the Public Information Committee in the cooperation with the Professional Community Committee. For more information, please call our Western Mass Intergroup at 413-532-2111. Write them at Western Mass Intergroup, 474 Pleasant Street, Holyoke, MA, 010-40. Or reach them online at westernmassaa.org. Western Mass Intergroup's number is in the telephone directory, and it's also a 24-hour hotline number if you ever need to talk to somebody. I'll repeat the number, 413-532-2111. If you or somebody you know is experiencing difficulty accessing an AA meeting, please contact our Accessibility Committee at 413-532-3752. For more information regarding Al-Anon or Alanine, please call 413-782-3406. Both of these lines are open 24 hours. Thank you for listening, and please remember, you don't have to stop drinking alone.